Thank you all for being here. It's my pleasure to be here. So I'm Nabil Natavcı. I was asked to introduce myself first. So I'm a third-year doctoral student at the Department of Health Management and Policy at the University of Iowa. I originally have a Master of Public Health degree from the American University of Beirut. So today I'm going to discuss a project that we did, which is the systematic review of telemedicine applications in the emergency rooms. And before I start, I'd like to just indicate that I have no relationships to disclose, particularly financial relationships with commercial interests. And I'd like to acknowledge the fabulous team that worked on this project, particularly Dr. Marsha Ward, who was the principal investigator and the lead author on this project, and Dr. Miro Jana from the University of Ottawa, who is a systematic review expert as well. And the fabulous teams of coders who really helped all the way to code the great amount of data that we have in the articles. And the funding was from the Hounsley Charitable Trust. So I know pretty much this might be some kind of redundant to some of us here, but I'd like to get a little bit of background on what telemedicine is. And contrary to what we would expect usually, it's not a very recent innovation. Actually, it dates back to the early 1920s, where a tech-savvy magazine called Radio News published a cover article on a radio doctor, maybe, which tried to discuss or introduce what should be the future of medicine, whereby they're trying to remotely examine, diagnose, and treat patients. However, this concept did not materialize until the early 1970s, where we've seen telemedicine starting to use information technology to provide clinical support and overcome geographic barriers and improve health outcomes. Of course, there are many benefits of telemedicine that I wouldn't go into details of them. There, you can read them on the screen, but I just wanted to pinpoint three main ones that are particularly important for rural areas as well, which is improving access to clinicians and specialist services, and reducing travel times for patients and their families as well. And most importantly, it provides timely decision making, which is a very important for emergency departments, our main topic. So this chart shows us the increasing trend that we've been seeing in the telehealth market across the years, 3 years prior to our current time and forecasted 2 years after. We're going to see that the telehealth market actually was going to reach more than 1.2 million patients. And this, of course, would be associated with an increase in revenues of up to around $2 billion. Of course, this trend in increasing telehealth is mainly associated or driven by the recent Affordable Care Act of 2010, which is pushing more for accountability among providers, more movement towards value-based reimbursement and pay-for-performance, as well as trying to keep the patients away from the hospitals and increasing the role of allied health professionals like nurses and physician assistants. Definitely, we're going to see many forms of telehealth or telemedicine. One of the major and most common forms, what we usually refer to, are the health buddies, which are the remote devices used by patients at home to monitor chronic conditions such as diabetes or hypertension and send it to their physician for follow-up. Another more common applications are those that were seen in the hospital-based settings. They are a little bit more complex and sophisticated technology, such as those seen in the intensive care units. And we also have another form of hospital-based applications are the ones seen in the emergency room, which is the focus of our talk for this afternoon. So why emergency care? why is it important and why are we focusing on it? Emergency care in the United States actually is facing many challenges over the past decades with an increase in the demand and decrease in the patient population seeing the emergency care, increase in the complexity of cases seen, in addition to the declining financial support and reimbursement for easy care. Another major area that we're going to hear a lot today is that small and rural hospitals are particularly challenged with recruiting physicians and specialty providers, particularly ED physicians and specialized medical doctors. In addition, emergency care rooms usually are having difficulties with staffing because they don't have an acknowledged number of patients getting into their rooms. It's a nature of people who are, sometimes you see high volumes, low volumes, you wouldn't know how to forecast, especially in rural areas. So they have trouble in planning and staffing their emergency rooms at the level seen at higher volume urban centers. So in terms of hospital-based applications, we've seen that two-thirds of the hospital-based telemedicine applications were particularly focused on emergency rooms and cardiology programs. So they were implemented in either emergency departments or cardiology programs if they were at the hospital level. However, despite this, we have limited evidence on tele-emergency impacts at the patient, provider, and organizational level. Also, despite the fact also that it is very important, again, for those hospitals to use telemedicine. A search of systematic reviews and meta-analyses indicated that we have 55 such systematic reviews or meta-analyses on telemedicine in general. However, only 3 of those systematic reviews and meta-analyses were directed to hospital-based application of telemedicine. And all of these 3 were particular in the intensive care unit. That's why we were interested in trying to make our own systematic review of the evidence reported on emergency care telemedicine. So our review aims were threefold. We wanted to present a comprehensive review of the published literature regarding setting, technology, and outcomes of tele-emergency applications. We wanted to evaluate this evidence and identify the knowledge gaps, and the hope that the stakeholders, including researchers and funding agencies, would focus more attention on high priority areas and gaps in the literature. So what we did is basically, systematic reviews are more like, I'd like to imagine them as a funnel where you're trying to put every single study that's published into a kind of funnel, and we try to synthesize the evidence at the end and try to see what do we have, and then disseminate it as we're going to do today. So in terms specifically, what we did is we looked at 4 databases, mainly PubMed, CINAHL, Cochrane, and Embase. And we searched for the following terms: telemedicine and emergency room, or telehealth and emergency room, or tele and emergency room. And we looked up to August 2013, and this identified around 340 articles. After several rounds of screening and coding, we ended up with 38 articles, and we're going to see what were the screening criteria and eligibility. So the first round of screening was looking whether it is actually a telehealth application. It was in the ER setting, and if it was an empirical study. So by empirical study, I mean that it should involve data, whether it's quantitative or qualitative, and it's not merely feasibility or a case study. And then the second round, it looked at content coding. So we tried to code the content based on 4 main areas. The first is the study setting. The second was the type of technology used, research methods, and the results. So from this, Again, we identified 38 articles that met our inclusion criteria. And interestingly, all of these articles were divided into three main groups, or can be categorized into three main groups. The first group is the general or diffuse patient population. So the ED were looking at any population with coming to the ED without having any specific conditions. The second group was those articles that looked at major treatment clinics, and those are more commonly in the United Kingdom. So the minor treatment clinics are kind of a scenario where the remote areas they have clinics run by nurses, and they would look at only cases that are not severe or life-threatening, and very mainly easy cases. And the last group of population was the ERs or studies looking at specialized patient populations, such as stroke symptoms, trauma care, ophthalmology, or cardiac care. In terms of geographic location of the studies application or where they were conducted, as I've mentioned earlier, all of the major minor treatment clinic studies were conducted in the United Kingdom, where this application originated initially. However, for the remaining 30 articles, more than half were done in the United States, and the remaining were in countries like Australia, Canada, South Korea, and Taiwan. In terms of the scope of the services, around a third of the studies looked or used telemedicine for teleconsultation only. Another 40% of the studies looked used telemedicine for telepresence as well as teleconsultation. And by telepresence, I mean they use telemedicine where the provider is actually either dealing with the patients directly, or at least having direct contact with the treatment of the patient. It's not only for just consultation regarding any treatment modalities or any patient. And in 21% of the studies, or 8 studies, it involved teleradiology, transmission of radiologic imaging. The special patient provider studies usually focused on usually use teleconsultation or telepresence in addition to telestroke, teletrauma, teleophthalmology, or dermatology, or airway management. In terms of the communicating settings or departments, the majority of the studies were linking at least one ER department to another ER department. 17 of the studies looked at multiple spoke, a single hub and multiple spoke system, where we have one single hub and different remote areas connecting to the hub. 13 studies looked into only between, use telemedicine to connect only an ER to an ER, a single ER to a single ER. And we only had one study in a correctional facility using telemedicine. In terms of the clinicians on both ends, almost all of the application used a physician at one end of the spectrum, and the physician was either communicating to another physician in 17 studies, or to a nurse or a nurse practitioners in 13 studies. In terms of the technology used, the vast majority of the articles used real-time communication, like audio-visual connection. In addition to that, in 16 studies they used, in 18 studies, sorry, they used image transfer. They transferred image related to the patient, whether it's dermatological images or radiological images. And only in 4 studies they use just the telephone to send images basically. And this is expected in the ER because we need continuous monitoring and very quick response from the remote hub. In terms of research hierarchy, we've seen that more than half of the cases were where the telemedicine was implemented only post the implementation, or the effectiveness of telemedicine was measured only post implementation. So we didn't have a pre-test, and only in less than a third of the studies they had a control group. And only 5 studies had a randomized clinical control design. In terms of the percentages of study reporting findings, by this we've looked at the results that were reported in each article, and we grouped the results into 5 categories that they should look at. First was the user perception, and by user we refer to whether it was the physicians or providers, clinicians, and even the patients. The second group was technical quality. The third was clinical processes and outcomes, or the impact on patient care. The fourth was disposition and dropout. And the last one was economic or cost effectiveness assessment. As we see that more than half of the articles published findings on most of these domains, except for economic and cost effectiveness, it was like less than a quarter of them actually mentioned this. In terms of, we tried to rate the evidence and just not to keep it in numbers, so we tried to look at the evidence whether it's positive or negative. And we've looked at 3 major components. First is whether it is positive or negative, the study reported a positive results or negative results, or mixed findings. The second component we looked at was the methodology study design, whether it's a strong study design or a weak study design. And the third component we looked at was the number of articles indicating a positive finding. And we came up with the 3 scores, 0, 1, up to 3, which is 3 is the strongest positive evidence that we have based on strongest methodologies. So the weakest evidence we had was in the economic assessment of the telemedicine and on the user perception, particularly in the minor treatment clinics applications. From a quick overview of the findings qualitatively, we've seen that in terms of technical quality, there was few transmission technical problems, but overall it was a satisfactory technique. In terms of user's perception, it was generally perceived positive by both patients and clinicians, and providers had no direct assessment of specific. However, the providers did not provide any direct assessment of indicators. In terms of clinical processes and outcomes, providers indicated that usually it's giving a good sensitivity and specificity at remote sites, and they expressed their confidence in the advice received. In terms of disposition, telemedicine in ED was proven to reduce patient transfers, and we had a limited evidence or inconclusive evidence on cost savings. So some studies indicated that it was cost effective, others indicated that it is not. Of course, our systematic review comes with several limitations. First of all, the one that I believe the most important thing is that in telemedicine, in research in general and in telemedicine particularly, if the result is not positive, it's not going to be published. So we're going to have a publication only of positive results, which eventually lead us to saying that telemedicine is very positive, but we don't see the negative results published. Another area is that we have didn't include the non-English articles and the citations in other databases. Another important area is generalizability is limited for telehealth, particularly because we have different settings. But we try to address this by dividing it into the 3 different settings that I talked about, the general, the minor treatment clinics, and the and the special patient population. The third limitation is the research designs of the individual studies that we included. Most of them, they suffered from methodological rigor. They had, their measures were limited, their statistical analysis were rare, and the favorable results were mainly supported only by qualitative data. So, in conclusions, overwhelmingly, the tele-ER studies reported positive findings, especially in terms of technical quality and user satisfaction. We had positive findings also reported for clinical processes and outcomes and disposition, but the rigor is, again, it was limited. Again, we had a limited economic outcomes assessment, and the studies of telemedicine indicated an application that meets the need of small and rural hospitals to address infrequent but emergency situations requiring specialist care. Finally, we've seen that studies indicate that teleemergency has considerable potential to expand the use of minor treatment clinics, as the one seen in the United Kingdom, to address access issues in remote areas and overcrowding of urban ERs. Thank you.
I
think we can address questions. Sure. Yeah, actually, that's true. So part of the results that we were looking at was user perception, and that included patients and family members. Not many studies did that. However, some of them did. And in general, the patients were very perceived and happy with the tele-ER application. They liked it, and it, particularly in relation to minimizing transfer to another hospital and minimizing travel costs. So they like that in that sense.
Hi.
Hi.
Great presentation. My
Thank you. Yeah, actually, cost effectiveness is very important for this type of technology to try to address it and understand if it's increasing cost or decreasing cost. If we're trying to theorize that, we're gonna see theories in different ways. It might either reduce cost by eliminating transfer costs, or it might increase costs in terms of the technology invested in it. And this depends on the perspective you're doing your cost effectiveness. But getting back to your question whether it's related to limited reimbursement, probably it could deal with that. I know that many of the payment here does not provide telemedicine payment, particularly Medicare and Medicaid, which is a challenge, and it needs self-investment from the hospitals. But still, that should be a factor for the hospitals themselves to invest into assessing whether this is actually cost effective on the long run or not. So, and another area that, in terms of cost effectiveness that we've explored, is that actually it might be even getting more money for the hospital, the rural hospital, because it's keeping their patients locally, like they might be getting admitted locally instead of transferring them to the remote areas.
Yeah, one more question.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. In terms of, actually, we eliminated honestly the studies that only dealt with feasibility. They didn't look at, like, they stopped at the point where they said, okay, it is a good technology in terms of connection. We can easily use it, and it's case studies. But even those studies that looked at the feasibility of connection, In general sense, they were not having any problems with connection or internet broadband. So I think that would be a challenge for some rural areas, but it seems they're trying to get around with it.
I can tell you from when I'll talk a little bit about that in my presentation, but yes, there has been problems, although it's getting better.
Yeah.
But there have been problems in high-speed internet access in rural areas. Thank you.
Thank you.